Jerry Carl, our U.S. representative for Alabama's 1st Congressional District. And good morning, Mr. Carl. Thank you so much for your office reaching out to us to be part of our community contact interview program.
My pleasure, Lori. It's just great to be with you this morning.
Now, you're in the Capitol building now, are you not?
No, actually, I'm in county building in downtown Mobile, and I leave for D.C. first thing in the morning.
Okay.
My schedule gets changed quite frequently, so I just do what I'm told to do here lately.
I understand. Tell us, I guess let's go back to early January on that somewhat fateful day. Were you in the Capitol when the boundaries were crossed?
I was actually on the floor. I try to spend as much time as I can in there, just trying to learn procedures and pick up on things I need to do. But yes, I was on the floor. The door that they were busting in and coming through was literally 25 or 30 feet away from me. So I was right in the middle of the action.
Were you afraid?
No, you know, I was mad, and I didn't get afraid. It was one of those things. I saw someone come in, a couple of people come in blue jeans earlier, and I thought how out of place they are. We couldn't have any family there, so there's supposed to be nothing but, you know, the congressman, House members on the floor. So when they started busting in, I was thinking it was just those two that I saw in blue jeans. Obviously, I was wrong. But my first reaction was, you know, open the door. Let's deal with this and move on. But we figured out it was much more than two people. We were busting up furniture, anything we could to make weapons. You know, it just escalated. It was a lot of chaos, a lot of screaming. A lot of people were panicking. I was just standing, trying to get a feel for what was going on and what direction and. You know, glass started popping and flying, and several of the congressmen had ran to the door and was actually holding the door. They were screaming orders at us, you know, get down behind the chairs. The chairs now have got Kevlar on the back of the chairs to, you know, make them bulletproof. So,
wow.
And there's gas masks underneath the chairs. They were screaming for us to get down below the chairs, get our gas masks on. Gas had been released, and I'm just standing there, you know, like a big old dumb country boy with my gas mask in my hand going, I ain't going to do this. I wasn't going to run. I was mad. And, you know, we didn't know who was breaking in. But it was just pure chaos.
And since that day, with the ensuing reports and discovery, do you believe that one of the theories that it was planned by the other side to frame Trump fans?
You know, we're still waiting on the FBI report. I've really been very cautious not to say much. You know, one thing, I had to go to an FBI briefing before all this happened, and one thing they taught us is didn't take but one or two Antifa people in a crowd to get the crowd stirred up and moving. You know, at this point, again, I don't want to. I'll say this much: the people that I saw had nothing to do with the mega movement that I have been involved in for the last 4 years. That was they were just there to destroy and tear up, and it had nothing to do with my view of Donald Trump.
Speaking of President Trump, you voted twice against his impeachment. Tell us about that, your feelings, and the process.
Well, I think the whole process, for me, has to do with the First Amendment. And if we as citizens can't express the way we think or the way we feel publicly, we're in trouble. And that includes things that we don't want to hear and ugly things from a lot of people. So I don't know why we would hold the president responsible for that, even if that may have been the case. and obviously it has not been proven to be, but he still has his rights as an American to express his feelings. So the First Amendment was and I thought long and hard before my first vote. I've taken a lot of criticism from some, especially some of my Democrat friends, and they are true friends. And you know, they don't quite view it that way, but that's okay. This is America. We can agree to disagree and move on.
You have a quote I'm looking at from NBC 15 saying, "I'm not going to let a bunch of thugs change how I vote. I'm not going to be scared into voting away somebody wants me to vote." Quote unquote. I'm reading online.
Yeah, I'm not. My personality is I don't deal with bullies very well, and I felt like they did break in on the floor trying to get obviously things disrupted and changed, and I wasn't going to change my view or my based on the people that entered that poll. We didn't know who they were. We didn't know who they were when we took that vote. I mean, it could have been Antifa, it could have been Black Lives Matter, it could have been anybody.
Business had to proceed. Yeah. Okay.
No, after the fact, it's easy to say, you know, who they were and what they were trying to do, but up until that point, you don't know.
Exactly. So you also have quoted on Fox 10 News that you've claimed overwhelming evidence of voter fraud and election irregularities, like 74 other million people believe. What will or can ever be done about that, do you think, in your position as a congressman?
I think what happened in this last election is done. What we have to do as elected officials is we have to make sure it does not happen again. We have focused through the Republican Party. We are looking at all 50 states. We're looking at their election laws. We're going to put together a punch list to help the state legislators. We will give them a punch list of things that we feel like they can change to shore up the elections in their state, and that's where it's got to happen. And we've already started with Georgia. So the next election is going to be much different.
You can take a page. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say it's going to be much different, and there will be some teeth in the laws that will actually hold people to following the law.
You can take a page out of our own Secretary of State, John Merrill. I've had the privilege of hearing him speak more than once, and he's got Alabama's ducks in a row. And is an example of how other states should proceed. Tell us a bit about him and our process.
Well, John Merrill, I'm the biggest John Merrill fan right now that you know of. I've used him as an example in Washington many times, and I would love to tell you John Merrill's the only reason why this is we had a seamless election, but John will tell you it's taken a number of years and a lot of people to actually get us to this point. Now where we're at right now is a little bit scary, in that we've got AOC who's already she's on record as saying Alabama doesn't have a Democrat voter problem. What they have is a voter suppression. So she is committed to help Alabama try to resolve that. And hopefully John Merrill, and I'm sure John's strong enough, John will stand up to that and keep these changes. We had a lot of stuff thrown at us. For those that don't know, I was county commissioner for the last 8 years. They targeted the four largest cities or the four largest counties in the state of Alabama. And we had several lawsuits put against us for our election laws. And they wanted us to change. They wanted drive-through voting. One of the things I was asked for, they wanted golf carts to take people to and from their cars to vote. They wanted to be able to do mail-in voting, which I don't have a problem with absentee voting, but there's got to be a reason to use that mail-in voting process. With this COVID situation, is a perfect storm. I don't know any other way to describe it. Mm-hmm. It's just a perfect storm for voter fraud. And yes, I'm on record. There's lots of questions about how these elections were ran in Georgia and Pennsylvania that no one has bothered to take time to try to get an answer to. So we knew voting against not accepting the electoral votes was going to be a problem. We knew that there would be a big issue made of it. But if you look at it historically, there's always been, I mean, the Democrat Party in 2005, I think in 2013, they did the same thing. And, you know, no one seems to pay any attention to that.
It can be very frustrating.
Official, I think it's my responsibility to stand up when I think there's something that just isn't right or doesn't seem right to question it.
We're speaking with U.S. Congressman Jerry Carl from Mobile here at WABF. It is 837, 40 degrees in downtown Fairhope. Now y'all are working on the stimulus package. We're hearing up to $4,000 a family, including some tax breaks. Can you get us up to date on where y'all stand now?
Well, I think what you see so far is a lot of people's wish list. We are a long way away from having that stimulus package ready to sign. We, the Republican Party, are encouraging President Biden to look at the $1 trillion he has sitting aside that no one has claimed or used for any purpose. Let's use that first before we go back to the well again. I think we need to get the markets opened up. We've got to get the vaccine. We've got to get folks vaccinated that want to be vaccinated. We've got to get people back to work. We've got to get our schools back going. We've got to get back to some type of normalcy, you know, as far as our families and our lives. And I don't know that $4,000 is going to do that. So, you know, and from a business standpoint, it's hard to get people to come to work when they know they can make a little money and stay home. So it's really a balance in Washington trying to get people to listen, because right now it's all about politics. And they're just throwing a lot of numbers around. I've heard 4,000. I've heard 1,400. You know, there's a lot of numbers being thrown around, but we're far, far from getting this done. There's 12 different committees that have been putting numbers together. I'm not on one of those committees. So we should start seeing those numbers come out this week, but we're still weeks away from having anything ready.
I know some Alabamians at Mobile and Bowling Countyans that have not received some or all of the payments so far. What should they do? I know they say go to IRS.gov and check your payment, and then they say there's no more information.
Well, we don't have access. My office doesn't have access to that information either.
Okay.
I mean, we're kind of at the mercy of that, too. I think it's the IRS they're pulling your records from the IRS, and it's based on the amount of money you've made
right. Over
a period of time. Obviously, I've not received a dime. I don't expect to receive a dime. If I did, I would return it, because I disagree with especially this last portion of money they're talking about. But I would love to get you more answers, but it is just pure confusion the way it was done. I mean, they just started mailing checks out.
A massive undertaking, no doubt. Y'all are also talking about defense spending and immigration with the new Biden administration. What progress have you seen, or what frustrates you about this so far?
Well, so far on the immigration side, the only thing the administration has seemed to focus on is just opening the borders wide open. I mean, he wants to obviously make a statement that, you know, our borders are open to our southern neighbors. And I just got off the phone with a farmer, and he was talking to me about needing some seasonal work. And that's where so much of the seasonal work comes through. I'm not opposed to that. I'm not opposed to working with controlled immigration, but what the president's talking about doing is just throwing the doors open and telling people to come in. That's not going to work. We're going to have terrorists that want to come across. There's going to be diseases right now that we're most fearful of, obviously with the COVID situation. So from an immigration standpoint, I think we've blown it. We've got no control, and you know, special interest groups are running that. If you think about it, you can get a $200,000 a year programmer that can come across the southern border from a very poor country, and you can get him for $45,000 or $50,000 a year. And in my opinion, that's what's driving so much of this is some of the high tech companies that are trying to get cheaper labor programming. But on the defense side, I do sit on the Armed Service Committee. We'll have our first full meeting this week. We had a little introduction meeting last week, but this week it'll be a full. I'll get indoctrinated on some of the things going on. I'm obviously looking very closely at the AUSL and Ingalls Shipyard, Huntington Ingalls Shipyard situation when it comes to our Navy. So we've got some vested interests there that we have to really watch and keep up with. I think our military right now is still underfunded. I think the President Trump has done an incredible job bringing them up to speed, much better than they were when he got there. But we're far from perfect. We've still got grounded planes. We can't get parts for. You almost feel like you're in a third world country when you start looking at some of this punch list of things that we need just to get our military back up on its feet.
Are you optimistic the Biden administration is going to do that?
I think it's a little early for me to judgment because I want to be as open-minded as I can with him until I see something that I can hang my hat on. I'm going to be very, very cautious.
Okay.
I don't want to trash him just for the sake of trashing him because he is our president. That doesn't mean I can't disagree with him, but I do want to respect the office.
Speaking of respect, do you feel the sense of unity they're asking the rest of us to participate in?
No, ma'am. It is not there. We're treated, they don't ask our opinion, they don't speak, they don't do. I mean, it's a very cold, hostile working environment where we're at. Now, I'm working hard with some Democrat friends that I've made friends with up there. And I'm just, I'm trying to do my own thing, develop my own relationships, and hopefully long-term we can come back together. But, I mean, right now you're either on one side of the room or the other, and nobody's listening. It's when everybody gets to arguing and screaming, nobody can be listening. So it's a very sad situation, but we can't give up. We can't quit. And we got to be positive about it. We have to keep reaching out to one another and try to fix what we think's broke.
That's a beautiful soundbite. You'll probably hear used later, but I'm not quite to the end of the interview, if you don't mind. Let's talk about gun control. What's the latest proposals concerning, in the South, our precious right to bear arms?
Well, I'm one of the biggest fans of the Second Amendment right. I've raised a Marine that's obviously I grew up around a lot of weapons. My grandchildren, my whole family shoots. We're just big on firearms. We're big on Second Amendment rights. I think the government should have zero to do with my gun ownership. With that said, I think the president took the advantage of the shooting, the horrible shooting at the school there 3 years ago, to kind of kick off a thought or an idea of AK-47s and some of the semi-automatic weapons with large clips. I think that's what that was about yesterday. I don't anticipate that to get any better, especially in Congress. Senate probably will cripple that or delay it or stop it altogether. But I'll tell you, the only hope we've got to stop so much of this foolishness with the Second Amendment that we see coming in the horizon is if we can take the House back in 2022 and possibly take the Senate back and start making people understand there is a Second Amendment right. And the biggest part of that Second Amendment right, to me, is to defend ourselves against a rogue government. and I'm not saying this government's rogue, but I think if the government understands that we are armed citizens and we can stand up for our country at any time, that, you know, it'll keep their attention.
Wow. What do you think is next for former President Trump?
I truly don't know. He's not going to go away. We don't want him to go away. I think he could be most productive if he would work with the House and the Senate for the 2022 elections that are coming up. I personally don't think he's going to run for president in 2024. That's just my personal feeling. That's four more years older. That's when he gets away from what he just came out of for a little while and takes a deep breath. I mean, that man's been under some pressure, if you think about it. My gosh.
Who would want to walk back
his
into
family,
it?
I mean, who would want that job? But I think when he gets away, he's going to figure out how strong and where his true strength is helping other elected officials. And you know, one man's not going to run this country. It's going to take us, or clean this country up. It's going to take a lot of us. So I think he would be most beneficial to the Republican Party and to the people if he was to start there. Now, whether he runs for president or not, or one of his family members, I have no idea.
Okay. What else would you like to mention, sir, that I have not thought to ask before we run out of time?
You know, I truly hope that people don't give up on the government. We've been in tougher spots than this. I mean, you look back in history at some of the wars we've been involved in and how bleak and how dark things have been. This is just a bump in the road, and we can't give up. And we have to, as a nation, we have to come together and be Americans. And I say that every day. You know, what are you, Republican or Democrat? I'm not. I'm an American. You know, be an American first, and you'll make the right decisions for America. And that's where we need to focus our attention on. You know, I love this country. This country has given me, and the people of this country have given me opportunities that, and all of us, that we would get nowhere else in the world. So we should be proud of it. And the one thing I've gotten out of my short term in office, I understand how fragile this thing we call democracy truly is. We're one vote away from socialism. We're one vote away from communism. We're one vote away from civil war. I mean, we're always just one vote away, and we have to hold together. This country can't afford a civil war. This country cannot afford to become socialist. We have to start thinking like Americans.
And that's beautiful, but that one vote away forces us to take a side, does it not? To be that Republican or be that Democrat.
I won't argue that, but you can't close your ears. You have to listen to what people are truly saying. I don't believe the majority of my Democrat friends believe what's going on in Washington, D.C. I hunt and fish with them. They own guns. They don't want anybody to fool with their guns. But you get a small majority that's running the Democrat Party that's in Washington right now that's making all this noise.
And what do you think?
I think the Democrat Party to work with us.
What do you think of the conspiracy theory that small majority is being paid off and controlled by the likes of Soros and China, et cetera?
You know, I have a hard time understanding how an individual can have that much power. Now, a country like China, yeah, I understand that. And George Soros, I've decided, is going to outlive all of us. I don't know. he's an evil man that has got an evil past, and we've got to work around him. China scares me to death, because China's got their focus on our markets, and people don't seem to care. All they care about is the price. You know, my mother was a product of World War II, and she wouldn't buy anything from Japan because she remembered Pearl Harbor. And towards her latter years, she got much softer, and she asked God to forgive her for her thoughts on the Japanese, which they're our friends now. They're our greatest allies. 9/11, the first phone call President Bush got was from the guy over the over Japan. I can't remember his name, but anyway, so you know, things will change, politics change, but China scares me. That's communism, and we're just selling our soul to them one piece at a time. I mean, you look at this Hunter Biden thing. You can call it politics all you want to, but if my son works for a company, if it works for China, guess what? I'm going to have a lean towards making sure that China gets an easier path than most countries. That's just our normal parent. That's just the way we do things as parents. You know, we want to make sure our children succeed. And for this Hunter Biden thing to just keep rocking on, it's scary. We'll probably never know the whole story there.
Another thing that is scary, in my opinion here, and I am stepping to an opinion, which I don't normally do in this program, but the opinion that even our national media has been bought or slanted. Here's Fox 10 News. I pulled up Jerry Carl quotes to research this interview. And it says, Carl claimed there was, quote, overwhelming evidence of voter fraud and election irregularities, unquote. Despite there being no evidence of fraud or wrongdoing, our national media still says there's no evidence of fraud or wrongdoing.
What I said, there was enough questions out there that I felt like we need to answer some questions, or we're going to have the American voters sitting around wondering why in the world should they even vote because it's all fixed. That was, but that's all right. We have to deal with the media. I think that attorney for Trump yesterday, when he got on that interviewer that kind of put words in his mouth, and he said, you know, the media's got to take responsibility for what's going on in this country. When you twist and you put your opinion involved in the news, that's when we start having problems, because that's someone's opinion. Yeah, you know, the days of Walter Cronkite are gone.
Yes. Congressman, what else?
I think the media plays a role in it. I do. I don't think they're all evil. I try to work with them best I can, and I do get misquoted.
And that could have been a misquote. I was blindly trusting that was not a misquote or taken out of context, and I'm sure as a lawmaker, you do have to deal with that happening.
You do, and your vote to not accept those, I can see where they pull that from, but that statement, they'd have to show it to me, but I've never said anything that strong, never.
Interesting, okay. Well, I'll get your assistant, Zachary, the quote to look at in case you want to challenge that. But
Well, it's not worth it. It's not, you know, I've got big wars out there. I don't worry about it. They want to pick on me. I'm a big boy. I'm going to look after my district, and not after Jerry, and I'll be okay.
Yes, sir. What a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
I look forward to sharing some more time with you in the near future.
We will definitely set that up. Thank you so much, Congressman Carl.
Please keep all these elected officials in your prayers.
We will. Thank you. Appreciate your hard work and your effort and what you're doing for Mobile County. Thank you so much. That was a Congressman Jerry Carl serving our first congressional district in Mobile. It is now.